Hi, welcome everybody to episode 88 of the Comics in Motion podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris Phelps, so my co-host and very good friend is Mr. Dave Horrocks.
Hello, Chris. And hello to our listeners out there. Be prepared for some dodgy Cockney impressions this week.
You know what, Dave, that was better than some of the acting in what we're going to review, but anyway.
So anyway, welcome to Comics in Motion, guys. What we like to do here is we like to review movies and TV shows that are based on comic books. Myself, I'll be reviewing from the perspective of a long-time comic book reader.
And I'll be reviewing from the TV and movie perspective.
And what we also like to do is we also like to spoil the hell out of everything we review. So if you haven't watched our choice of the week, then we'd advise you to proceed with caution. And remember, with an average podcast comes no responsibility. Now, this week, we have Tony Farina again, friend of the show, to join us. Welcome to the Toe Show. Oh, fucking hell, I did that again.
You did that last time.
To the Toe Show, Nia. Yeah. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Hello. Thanks for having me back. I'm very excited to be here. I love the show.
Thanks, Tony. I just appreciate you coming on for Dave, just messing that up at the start. That was great.
God, I've got a mental block on that. Welcome to the Toe Show, Nia.
That's right.
Maybe
if you were to write it out, you'd probably still say it. Yeah.
I thought you were still in full-on Cockney accent then, Dave. I thought that's what happened then. All right, son. Yeah.
Plenty of time for that, Chris. Well, I have to say, if you haven't guessed already, so today we're going to be discussing Pennyworth. And I have to say, thank you very much to Tony, because quite honestly, and I haven't told you this before today, but probably if you hadn't sent out that tweet to say, if you're not watching this, you're missing out. Because I must admit, I'd seen it. I knew when they were filming over here and just kind of thought, yeah, it's just going to be cancelled pretty soon. I'm not sure. Would I have anything really to, you know, get invested into this series? And of course, one of my favorite bits out of Teen Titans Go to the Movies was when they basically had a movie for everyone apart from Robin. So they had, like, you know, the movie is Alfred coming broom. <You know>? Then they had a movie about the utility belt and everything. So when I heard Pennyworth was coming out, I was like, oh, come on, you're really scraping it now. But I'm absolutely delighted we've gone to review this.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah, I've been reviewing it for the site, for DC Comics News. And it was something that was, again, on my radar. I knew it existed. And the first three episodes were free on Amazon, so I probably would have watched those anyway. But yeah, when they asked me to review it, I said, sure. And I've been really pleasantly surprised with it, too. I've enjoyed it. I think as we've moved, you know, we'll see how many legs does it have? How long could it go? I don't know for sure. But I've definitely enjoyed it so far.
Well, it's on Epix, isn't it? So, yep. I mean, I guess expectations are lower than if it was on one of the other kind of cable channels or network channels, I guess. I mean, it isn't actually out in the UK at the minute, so we have to VPN in and kind of watch it that way. But I'm hoping that because the expectations must be lower, that it's got at least a few seasons in. But there have been a few cancellations this year, haven't there? So not to be a bit of a downer on it, I just hope this breaks that kind of trend that we've got at the minute.
Yeah, I think that's the only worry I've got from what I've seen so far, and I know we're going to get into it, is it stinks of, and I've not even watched the Swamp Thing and that, but we had the rumour that Titan Series 2 is the only DC property they were going to keep on, which we know the series is actually out in, is it October? It's out.
September 6th is the day it premieres on the app.
Mm-hmm. Ah, right. So we will be on that as well. And yeah, it does reek of another DC cancellation where I think potentially, I don't want to shoot my load too early. I know I do that quite a lot, not on this show. But anyway, I think it's got a lot of legs. So I'd be disappointed if it does get the chop.
Yeah, they just canceled Krypton from Sci-Fi. Yeah. And I haven't watched that, but they had, like, well, just a month or two ago, that show was a big hit and they were going to spin Lobo off from that. And then the next thing you know, Sci-Fi is like, no. So I guess the DC universe might pick it up, though, I hear, and try to keep it alive on that app, but I don't know for sure. That's still just kind of floating around.
Yeah, I don't know. The last I'd heard was that because Warner Brothers are going to release their own streaming service, they're at kind of loggerheads with the DC branch, if you like. So, you know, again, it's one of those things where they're not all singing from the same hymn sheet, it seems.
Yeah, and I think as well, it's embarrassing from my point of view when you look at what Disney are doing, because Disney Plus, I'm sorry, but apparently if you sign up for 3 years, I saw this today, you get it at $4 a month for 3 years, Dave. So hopefully that translates to £4 a month in the UK and you'll never see me again. I think we're just going to keep reviewing Disney properties more than anything, because I will be on that all day long.
Yeah. I saw that too. That I saw that today. And I did that with the DC service. I was an early adopter, so they gave me a discounted rate if I paid for the year, and they gave me 3 free months. And so that was a no-brainer. But this, I know I saw that and I keep going back and forth on it. And I said that to my wife just the other day. You know, there's so much. What, you know, how do you know? Like, you have to leave the house sometimes.
Yeah. Well, maybe.
Maybe not. We just do loads of podcasts, Tony. We'll do a Disney Plus one with you now. We'll just keep making them up, because I am not going anywhere when this comes out. It's fantastic. I think as well, I'm going to get into a lot of the cartoons as well, the back catalogue of cartoons, especially the Marvel stuff that I've missed over the years.
Yeah. No, it is good. And I know in the UK, it's actually coming out on Stars. Is it Stars Play streaming app? So that's another $8.99 that people are going to have to sign up to in the UK. And honestly, that I don't know if there's a big enough market that you're going to get loads of people signing up and then loads of people watching Pennyworth. So I'm just hoping, and you know, one of the reasons we wanted to do the show kind of at the halfway point in the season is to just get the message out there, and just, you know, because this, I really would be gutted if this only ever saw like a season one.
Yeah, I would too. I really think we'll get into it when we talk. I've already watched episode 6, and I think, you know, they're walking a fine line there with where they're headed, but just the setting, everything about it is really great. Yeah, I would be really disappointed too. Hopefully, because it's on Epix, and the stuff I read, Epix doesn't have to give away their viewer data. They don't promote, yeah. They don't say what it is. So for them, I think if they can get good word of mouth, and this could help, then they'll keep it going. So yeah, I'm all for that. That's part of why I've been like kind of heavily pushing it out there, trying to get anybody to pay attention to it, because it is really good. And, you know, and again, I think there's some flaws, but my wife, who normally is hit or miss with the superhero show, she really loves this show too. So I think there's just a broad appeal to it.
Yeah, I agree. And really, I know we're going to get into it, but it's not really a superhero show, is it? So that's what makes it better, I think. It's a bit more grounded. So I think, guys, Dave, should we go to the comic book background?
Yeah, let's go for it. Now, Alfred first appeared in Batman number 14 in 1943 and was created by writer Don Cameron and artist Bob Kane. Now, at that time, he was a clean-shaven, portly chap, and he had a little bit of a Sherlock Holmes look about him. But also in 1943, you had the Batman serial coming out, and you had this actor, William Austin, who was a fairly trim chap with a little moustache. And so the DC editors, they wanted to make sure that Alfred's look in the comic books reflected what was on the small screen. And so they sent him off to fat camp in the comics, and he came back all slimmed down, and he was sporting a fashionable little moustache. Now, in this original incarnation, he was basically the dynamic duo's valet, and it was his father Jarvis's dying wish that he carry on the tradition of serving the Wayne family. Now, initially, Alfred's surname was actually Beagle, and then in 1969, they just started referring to him as Pennyworth. And Alfred had discovered the Batcave by mistake in that first appearance back in 1943, but they updated this in 1957, where he followed Dick Grayson's voice to find Robin, and Batman needed his wounds tending to, and so he helped patch him up. And then so from that point, one of Alfred's jobs became actually patching up, you know, Batman plus the wider kind of Bat family. Now, that was all pre-Crisis on Infinite Earths in 1985. Since that time, where the whole DC universe was effectively rebooted, significantly. I know we've had a couple of others since, but it's been canon since then that Alfred was the family valet for all of Bruce's life. And Alfred's backstory has been played around with it a bit, quite a bit in the comics, but in Frank Miller's run on All-Star Batman and Robin, the Boy Wonder from 2005 to 2008, he wrote Alfred as a much tougher character. And he was basically a medic in the Royal Air Force and had been part of the British Secret Service. I will say, though, probably one of the biggest influences for this particular series is probably not from the comics, and it's probably more from the Nolan trilogy. And that was where we first saw Alfred being portrayed as having this kind of ex-SAS British Army background as well. So I thought that was really interesting because they're very much off book on this series, and I think they've got a lot of creative freedom with that. Now, Chris, how about the series background?
Yeah, so on May 2018, Epics announced that they were going to go into full production of the first series, and it was commissioned for 10 episodes. Now, the pilot was written by Bruno Heller and directed by Danny Cannon, both who were exec producers across the whole series. Now, production company Warner Horizon were included on upon this. Now, so it premiered on the 28th of July 2019 on Epics. Now, the casting that took place in October 2018 was announced that Jack Bannon, Ben Aldridge, Ryan Fletcher, Hainsley Lloyd Bennett, Paloma Faith, the singer, and Jason Fleming had all been cast in regular series roles for this. Now, the principal photography took place around October again at Warner Brothers Studio in Levensdon, Hertfordshire, England, and additional shots were taken around London to set the landmarks, particularly the Floring Court, as that was the home and neighbourhood of Alfred in this series, well, the first series at least. Now, Rotten Tomatoes, which I find really interesting, and I really want to get into this when we review. Critically, it's only at 62% based on 21 reviews, and I have read a couple of snippets. Basically, some people just not getting what this is about, saying this doesn't grow or expand the Batman universe. What sort of story are they telling? And for me, they're just telling Alfred's story. So we'll get into that. But on Rotten Tomatoes as well, the actual user review score is at 96%, which is absolutely fantastic. So it's one of these things where what the critics are going into, whether it's been reviewed by purely comic book reviewers, I'm not sure. I know, disrespect to yourself, Tony, because I know that's what you do. It's really, really interesting. Now, on Metacritic, again, it's at 62%. That's only based off 8 reviews, so we can't really give it too much of a standout moment. But it's just really weird with the reviews. Now, I wanted to read out one of the reviews that came from Sam Basanti, from the AV Club, and I quote, he's put, Penning would almost be more entertaining if you changed some of the names and jettisoned the comic book connection entirely. At least then there'd be no distracting questions about why Thomas Wayne has a sister, why he's secretly working for the government instead of becoming a rich doctor back home. As it stands, though, the show is an entertaining as it is frustrating feel of sort of like an adaptation of a comic book based on the Guy Ritchie's Sherlock Holmes movies. In brackets, which I'm not very happy with all of the Britishness that it implies. So, you know, I just find it really whether people have just completely missed this, you know, from what I'm seeing on the screen anyway. But yeah, I mean, that's all I've got for the series review. But again, this sort of thing, and sometimes I'm wondering whether there's an agenda with it. Just the reviews alone could be something that gets cancelled off. And that's what I'm quite worried about.
Yeah, I don't. Well, you said 96% of viewers, like,
yeah, yeah.
And it's on IMDb, it's ranked at an 8 by yeah. viewers, so that's pretty good. I don't know, I think that's insane. I don't get that, trying to say that everything is canon. If that were the case, then, you know, everything that Dave reads every week about the background of the show, that's all you're allowed to film. And I know, Chris, you said before you really loved Smallville. Well, that clearly wasn't canon, but nobody cared. Yeah. That ran for, what, 10 years. So I don't understand. It's a prequel series. You're supposed to, if the whole point of the prequel series is it's supposed to be step for step of exactly leading up to what happens in the comics, then there's absolutely no risk. Then there's no stakes. Everyone's going to be fine. And why do it then?
Yeah. I agree. I agree. And I think if it is on this Epics, I'd say I've never heard of Epics. So I'd say it's a bit like Netflix, is it? Epics.
No, it's a cable channel.
Ah, right, okay. So it might be if it gets picked up in the UK as well. Realistically, we have certain satellite channels that might pick it up, and that's where it could get some legs for further series. But again, that's happened a few times where they've commissioned it in the UK, Tony, and you really get into something, and then after one or two seasons, they just can it, don't they? And there's no even explanation or like full stop on the show. They just don't make a third or fourth series, and it just completely ruins what you've watched. And I, as someone who likes this sort of thing, and obviously the stuff that we review, I really try not to get into a lot of things. If my wife says to me, right, Sam, she goes, I've got this thing, do you want to watch it? And I'll go, no. And she'll, why? So it's been really, I said, because within two or three series, it's just going to get cancelled. And I've been quite wary of that. Ever since Lost finished, which I wasn't a massive Lost fan, I did like the first few series, but there was a few sort of clones after it. And every time you got into it, within one or two series, they were gone. So it's just like, I'm skeptical with this, if not worried as well, to be fair.
I'm sure we've discussed this before, but I just can't remember in what medium. But there was a series called Invasion, which was my tipping point. Mm. And it had just built up nicely. It all simmered all the way through that first season. And it was all like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers type thing. And, I was just chomping at the bit, and then they cancelled it. So it's like, oh, right, that's it. I'm done. I'm done with all these TV series. And then, of course, you know, you end up getting sucked in again pretty soon. But, and I know what you mean. But I think, honestly, guys, I've got to say, and I think I'm pretty diplomatic, but I'm just going to say here, the critics just don't get it. If that's the kind of thing that they're saying and that's where they're rating it, they're just not getting it at all. And the comics aren't even consistent with themselves. They often rewrite and reboot and everything. So this is just a telling of a story. So just strap yourself in, look at it, try and get rid of all that baggage. And if you don't like it, fair enough. But, you know, just view this as, you know, its own story that it's telling, that's got a kind of loose connection to a long-known character.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough. I'm chomping at the bit. Now, just before we get into it, guys, shall we have a listen to the trailer?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
The army, I'll have no more to do with it now. I want to be my own man. I started up a security firm. My apologies. Thursday night is always a bit naughty. We could meet Saturday. It's going to be a nice day.
It's rather forward of you.
No, I saw the weather forecast. I didn't get your name. Pennyworth.
Thomas Wayne. I have security needs. I recently discovered a criminal conspiracy.
They missed.
They can't afford to have any loose ends.
Help me! When you've got Thomas Wayne. You're a dancer, are you?
I love dancing, me.
Mr. Pennyworth, if they kill me, they have to kill you. There will be no exchange.
Things go pear-shaped. I'll do my best to keep you alive.
This great nation of ours is at war with itself. We will take back this country. It's a coup d'etat.
As a rule, if you have to use French words for something, I don't like it. I don't like violence. And I don't like you, mate.
Find a position in a good household. Do right, you're a butler before you're 40.
Okay, now before we get into our review, I'd just like to play you this promo, guys. So this is another podcast from the Britpod scene. It's a great podcast called Ask Karen.
I've got a question from Chris, who's sitting right next to you here in London. I love to listen to the podcast on my journeys to and from work. Are there any you can recommend?
Well, actually, Chris, funny you should ask. There's one I love to listen to that's called Ask Karen.
So I've got to the sandwich bowl, saw it in the shop, turned left and went in the shop next door. Honestly, did, and it was, I was going to Specsavers. Literally should have gone to Specsavers.
It's funny, informative, and they not only help people with issues, dilemmas and problems, but they also venture into some great conversations on a variety of topics.
Wow, that sounds like a really fun podcast. By accident, I put my shower curtain on back to front.
What do you mean you put it on? What's the right way around to wear it?
I didn't wear it.
Are you like playing Superman or something?
Yeah, I was dressing up. I'm guessing I can find it just by searching Ask Karen on any good podcast app.
Yes, that's right, Chris.
I believe they also have a website too that has all the info anyone might need, which is askkaren.co.uk.
It's a lovely looking website too.
That's great. Thanks, Karen. So join me and Karen on our potentially award-winning podcast, Ask Karen.
Okay, so guys, what I thought it'd be great to do is to just start off, obviously, from that initial pilot episode, we get to meet Alfred, played by Jack Bannon. So as our guest, Tony, I'll come to you first. I mean, what do you think of Jack Bannon's portrayal of Alfred here?
Well, I feel that he is channeling Michael Caine's portrayal of Alfred all the way. And whether... I mean, here's the thing about it is I'm American, so the accent doesn't, I know you guys have done the, you know, in The Boys, you were talking about the bad Dick Van Dyke accent. To me, honestly, it doesn't matter. He just commands the screen. The show is better when Jack Bannon is on the screen. So I think his Alfred is fantastic. The way that he has that, like, just command of the screen, he has command of the character. And he is showing us this version of Alfred that I think would make sense down the line. Like, oh, this is the guy who's going to be in charge of Batman's life. I totally believe it. He's confident. He says no when he wants to say no. He says yes when he wants to say yes. So I just think he commands the screen and the show is better when he's on the screen.
Yeah, well, Dave actually collared me and I did say that Michael Caine's Alfred was a wet lettuce in the Dark Knight trilogy, and when we were talking I did actually forget that and say he's definitely channeling his Michael Caine in the Michael, and I absolutely love him, so my credibility on this situation is dropping.
So context, I did excuse you because I said I think you were trying to talk up Jeremy Irons and his portrayal. But I think you overshot it a little bit in calling a national treasure like Michael Caine a wet lettuce.
Yeah, but I mean, he's mid-70s when he did The Dark Knight, so I've got to be forgiven slightly. But yes, I agree with you, Tony. I think what I find as an actor, I think he's fantastic. And yeah, he's channeling his inner Michael Caine. And when we've all watched things where somebody in, say, a prequel tries to do the original actor and it doesn't come off well at all, but there's just enough in this for me to believe he is a young Alfred, and I think he's fantastic. I think he's built and everything's perfect. He's slim, he's good looking, he's got the accent. Now, for us, Tony, I don't know whether a lot of people can sometimes not always hear the British accents, but myself and Dave, we said it loads of times, we're from the north, so the way they speak in this is proper Cockney Barrow Boy accent. He's over-exaggerated at times, but that is how certain people talk. It's how you had films like The Crazy with the gangsters. You had, you've got the Guy Ritchie films like Snatch and Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. They do speak like that down there. And they have a lot of what's called Cockney rhyming slang where they'll have certain words mean certain thing, like an Irish jig is a wig, you know, and all that sort of stuff and things like that. Or apples and pears is the stairs. And just so that's it. Me and Dave have been around that on TV shows for a long time, but maybe in the reviews it's not coming across. But yeah, it's a fantastic bit of acting from him. And I do think when he's not on the screen, I'm pining for him to come on, to be honest.
So what I'm really surprised about, to be honest, is just how British this show is. Like I say, knowing especially that it's initially the US audience that's targeted first, there's loads of slang, not just from the kind of Cockney rhyming slang, but old Davy Boy there. you know, he's coming out with all the Scottish slang as well. And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm just on the edge of what I can understand here. But I'm sure there must be lots of the American audience that aren't picking up a lot of what's being said here.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, not only in the slang of what Dave Boy says, but actually to understand him. His sometimes I don't even know what words he's saying because it's so thick. And I don't know the actor, Ryan Fletcher. I don't know where he's from. I don't know anything about him. So if that's just his normal speaking voice or if he's cranking it up to 11. But there are definitely times where we almost wonder, man, should we just turn the captions on to know what he's saying? But it's still fine.
Yeah. You know, there's a guy who's very Glaswegian accent who I used to work with. And, you know, when you'd be at company events and stuff like that, you're typically getting north of kind of 11 o'clock, approaching midnight. When everyone's had a little bit too much to drink, his Scottishness just did crank up to 11. And my coping strategy was to just look at facial expressions. You know, if he was kind of smiling and nodding, you know, I'd smile and nod back. If he was sort of shaking his head, I'd go nod knowingly and then shake my head, you know. So I you can't do that really with a TV series, that when you're trying to understand the exposition. But it did, some of the stuff that he comes out with, because he is a, you know, he has got some issues there, old Davey Boy, hasn't he? And you know, he does remind me of that bloke, to be honest.
He does, to be fair. Yeah, it's very interesting you said that, Dave, because I'd not picked up on that, especially for yourselves, Tony, listening to it where it started. But yeah, it's an interesting dialogue, the British, and that they have their own little bits of slang, which I don't think I really appreciate. So you watch something like this, because I can understand what he's saying. I'm sure you can, Dave, for the Scottish. It doesn't bother me. I've got my grandfather's Irish, you know, so I get that thick Irish accent really well. But yeah, it's interesting. But I suppose when I listen to an American accent, Tony, I don't think even if the reason lies, there's not many I don't understand. They might, some of the southern ones are quite quick, aren't they? Then they droll the way they speak, but you can pretty much understand what they're saying. But yeah, that's maybe that's why it's been reviewed not as favorably, because maybe some people just can't understand what's going on.
That may be. There's actually a moment later when Martha shows up that they have a whole conversation about taking the mick out versus taking the piss out.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like, what a funny way to explain the difference. And he, you know, and Alfred's real cool about it, but it was funny. And the way that she said it in her, you know, straight as American of a centralized accent as you could have, for her to say, "You're taking the piss out of me, aren't you, Alfred?" And that was really funny. I thought that was a nice way to remind everyone that, yes, this show is not in America, everybody. And that's okay.
No, you're right. Now, just out of interest, guys, Tony, you've come up with a very, very good point. But as we review Batman v Superman, which Martha was it?
This is Martha Kane.
Now, I have to say, and I'm not going to put my cards completely on the table, but we reviewed Batman vs. Superman a few weeks ago, and I've said, not for the first time, that I just don't care. I don't need to see Bruce's origin again. You know, so for the new Batman movie that's being made, I absolutely don't want to see the Waynes being gunned down. This series has made me care about Thomas and Martha Wayne, or Martha Kane as she is in this. But I just think for the first time, you know, we're in 2019 and we've seen that, you know, Batman is probably certainly in the TV and movie space. Has anyone had any more movies than him? You know, and so this is the first time really, and I'm really invested in those characters.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's an interesting way to do it. And one of the things you mentioned in the review is like, you know, why is Thomas in the CIA and what is all this? It doesn't matter. This is our way to care. Now that there's going to be a Batwoman show on the CW in America, yep. And that is Kate Kane, who is, you know, a cousin of Bruce, first cousin of Bruce. It's Martha's brother's daughter. So, you know, so I think it's interesting, too, that Martha, the Kane family, is going to get their due finally, because they have been relegated to really a bloody body and a string of pearls. That's all you ever know about Martha Wayne. So I think it's fine to give her some. There's nothing we know. So whatever these people want to do, we can get into it. And I think you're right, Dave. We completely care about her.
Yeah, so I think one of the standout characters for me is she's one of the baddies. He's Bette Sykes, played by Paloma Faith, which I'm not a massive fan of her music, I must admit, Dave, but I think her acting in this is brilliant. She's just this down-to-earth, absolute nut job, and I think she plays it brilliantly.
I need more of her. I want her to be the villain. I know there's this other stuff happening, but anytime she is on screen, it is frightening and amazing. And the way that she just smiles right at you and... like right at whoever she's about to kill or do something terrible to, she just does it with a smile and she never gets riled up. And she is just so fantastic. I love her. I'm so glad she exists as a character.
Now, I could guess that you would love her, Chris, because she sounds like she should be pulling pints behind on Coronation Street. You know, right from the first time she's on screen, she's like, where the guy asks, do you know who I am? It's like, oh, well, I hope so. Fantastic. She's like an early kind of jumping universes, but she's a bit like a kind of Manchester Black Widow, isn't she? She just does whatever it takes. And absolutely, you know, I was pretty impressed. Now, I'd only really became aware of her because she did, what was it called? Never Tear Us Apart. It was on the Umbrella Academy soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was the first time I'd kind of noticed and really listened to her. But, you know, so when I saw her coming on screen, I was like, not really expecting that much. But no, she's absolutely brilliant. And apparently she takes a little bit of it off camera as well. So she was scaring some of the other people around her because she was staying in character just a bit too long. And she's apparently quite a nice person, but... she stays as Bette Sykes for a bit longer after the cameras stop rolling.
Yeah, because she's got a bit of a Helena Bonham Carter feel to her. You know, she's very versatile as an actress. I know she's a singer. She has done a couple of big songs, to be fair. Not that anything trip off the end of my tongue, guys. But yeah, revelation, to be honest. Revelation. It looks like she's been acting for years. And I think as well, I think what you were saying, Tony, about Jack Bannon being on the screen as Alfred, I think when she's not there, it loses something. Not like it loses the story, but I think what she offers is something creepy and mysterious all the time. You're not sure where she's going to go. She's quite got a schizophrenic personality because when she's holding hostage, obviously Alfred's girlfriend, she's like, oh, I'd love to go for a cup of tea with you. You know, you're a lovely girl, you know, and it's like, right, yeah, okay. You've just chained her up and everything, but you do that if you want, you know, so.
She has no idea. That's the thing. Like, the thing that I love about Bette is she is 100% unaware that anything she's doing is wrong. It's just a day, and this is what you do, and this is how you do it. And whatever happens, she's just fine with it. Yeah, and she falls in love with Esme, and she doesn't understand why Esme doesn't love her back. And the way that she projects that, like, I can't imagine being on set with that and being not laughing at myself or thinking how absurd it is. She is so great. And I know that shows like this don't win awards, you know, because if they did, Vincent D'Onofrio would have two for his portrayals of the Kingpin in seasons 1 and 3 of Daredevil.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if anybody deserves a supporting actor award, it's based on 5 episodes, it's her. She steals every scene she's in, and I am afraid of her. If I saw her on the street, I would be very uncomfortable. She is so realistic and just fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. What about yourself, Dave?
Yeah, no, absolutely brilliant. I wasn't quite sure where she was going to go. And absolutely, she is scary because she's not really got too much of... there's no up and down with her. She's just very level all the time. And you just don't know what's going on in that head. And so, yeah, absolutely unexpected standout character for me.
Yeah, and I think it's... what I think I love about her is that... you know, there's the scene where she's in prison and the way she manipulates that guy, and he's the stand-in for us, right? The prison guard who gets duped by her. He's like, you're like, oh, okay. Just like anybody that she meets, the reason she can get away with everything is because she believes whatever she's saying is true. She is completely diabolical. And so if she's saying, yes, of course I have, you know, $100 to give you, you'd think she's going to reach in her purse and give you $100, but then she, you know, stick you in the throat with the shiv, probably.
Yeah. I was wondering where you were going with that, us being the stand-in for the prison guard.
No, not that way. No, just as the audience, we're the ones who want to believe everything she says. Yep, that was the wrong way to go. Sorry.
I can't, probably, yeah, moving on.
Sorry, nope.
would say is I find the world that this has created, which is why, you know, that the critical response has irritated me a little bit, to be honest. I find the world that they've built here really fascinating, because it's not, it's kind of the 60s, but it's like the DC Universe 60s. So they're playing with a lot of British history, and they're borrowing from like the 20s and 30s. You know, Alfred's working in the bar. He's the head doorman there, it seems. And they're, you know, I think the first time we go in there, they're playing a bit of Amy Winehouse, which is obviously, you know, very recent history. So, but they're mashing this stuff up all together. You've got like public executions and stuff like that. You've got, going back to that scene in the prison, you've got a suggestion of DNA evidence, which obviously didn't come till years later after the 60s. So I think initially I was trying to wrestle with, okay, when is this supposed to be set? But then some, no pun intended, but the penny dropped. And I thought, you know what, this is just the DC Universe 60s. So, and I was able to wash away any kind of questioning about where it was or anything and just go with it.
Yeah, I think as well, I don't know whether, do you watch Peaky Blinders, Tony?
I don't. I know that it exists, but it's on the long list of shows I should watch, probably.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Dave had said to me before he even watched this, I'd seen your tweets and we both agreed we need to review, you know, Pennyworth. And Dave was ahead of the game with me. And you'd said to me, Dave, didn't you? You'll like it because it's very much like the sort of backdrop and the setting of Peaky Blinders. Now, it's got that dark, grubby tone to a lot of the big cities that they do have in the UK. Even to this day, you know, you go to areas of London, Birmingham, Manchester, and yeah, you get the tourist spots, but there's some proper shitholes there as well. And this is what's showing the sort of undergrowth of the capital of the UK. And in the 60s, especially, when you still had like, everyone had coal fires, everyone, you know, you had this, like, you know, and I'm taking the mic, but Mary Poppins job with Dick Van Dyke where they're all chimney sweeps, you had all that going on. It always looks like all the houses are dirty when you watch this, and I think it sets the tone right, even the down to the pubs and everything. The pub that he goes in is brilliant, the way they've done that. And there is still pubs in the East End like that have preserved that sort of heritage and the wood and everything. So I think I totally agree. I think the complete setting of it, and it, yeah, I know I'm critical at times of like a close set. You know, I always say I feel claustrophobic, like when we did Batman 89 and it felt like it was, you were literally driving the Batmobile from one set to the other. You know, they were trying to make it look like he traveled for miles. And I get very claustrophobic, but with this, it doesn't feel like that. It feels really, really well directed and shot, and I'm with you. I honestly don't know what the critics have seen in this, because I just think it's fantastic. The whole dynamic and the fact that the people who've created the show in the background, not the directors, not the actors, but the actual showrunners who have to go, and what they do is they go in charity shops and go on eBay and they're going on flea markets looking for stuff that was from the 60s and that. And that alone, even if it's a one scene where there's a cigarette lighter or there's an ashtray or there's a clock from the 60s, it's fantastic to see. And I think that's something that's captured so well in this.
Yeah, and what I love is, you mentioned the public executions, Dave. But it's not only are there public executions, they're broadcast on live TV.
Oh, yeah.
The
yeah.
TVs are these little black and white TVs. And there's a scene, and it's a blink and you miss it. And it's the one thing that my wife and I looked at each other and we were like, all right, we're all in forever on this show. The TVs are being delivered on a horse-drawn carriage.
Yeah.
And it was just like, we don't care. This is what the DC Universe would do. There's a blimp. There's a guy in a cage, a dead body hanging in the cage, and the TVs are being drawn by in a horse-drawn carriage. And Alfred uses a cell phone at one point. Yeah, in the very first episode or second episode, right, when after the thing with Thomas goes down, the baddies from the Raven Society have a cell phone. It's like an old 1980s bag phone. And Alfred picks it up and he calls.
Yeah,
I didn't see that at all.
It's nuts. And it's just so, to me, that's what, it's just perfect. It's like, this is what it is, and nobody blinks twice at it. And you're right, maybe the critics are like, well, when is this supposed to be? But it's in the Batman universe. In the Batman universe, Superman exists too. So if Superman can exist, then we can have this stuff. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I think definitely, it probably won't resonate with you, Tony, but the thing that I get from it that I can match up with Peaky Blinders. And that's one of the highest rated shows coming out of the BBC, certainly in the last few years, is that whole idea of the soldier coming back from war, having PTSD way before anyone really understood it, and them kind of struggling with that. Your main protagonist is this kind of reluctant hero. You know, he's not going out looking for trouble, but he's always got, you know, all the answers, it seems, and he's fairly dashing, and, you know, all the ladies like him and stuff like that. There's a lot that's very similar to Peaky Blinders. And so it doesn't stack up to me why someone, you know, raving about Peaky Blinders would just say, oh, well, you know, there's no one in spandex in this show, so this is rubbish, you know.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I just think I don't get it. I think everything about it is it's beautifully shot. I think whoever the art director is doing a bang up job. And I agree with you, Chris. I don't feel claustrophobic. It feels like a really big world. I mean, they occasionally do go out into a field, or they go out into the country too, but it everything about it, I've yet to see a scene in there where I was like, well, that doesn't seem real. It everything seems completely real, even live public execution seems completely plausible.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Dave. I'd not picked up on that. I did look and think they wouldn't have done that in the 60s. They'll just about put the man on the moon in the 60s, let alone public executions. It certainly wasn't in the middle of the daytime. So, yeah, you've got to sort of slightly dispel a bit of belief. But also, I've got to say, guys, how tough is Alfred? Nobody messes with Alfred. He just absolutely takes names. Everywhere he goes, he is just laying people out, and I absolutely love it.
I do too, and he doesn't even he's never nervous, no matter where he is. No. When he Jack the Ripper lives in this universe too, and he is a cannibalistic undertaker. So that's the thing. And he stares down his guys and his nephew, and he just doesn't care. You never went into a scene with Alfred where you think he's going to lose. You're right. And he's this twig of a guy, but he's a total badass the whole time.
Yes,
so without as well, isn't he? And I guess what this series has had me questioning as well, because, you know, I love the whole, you know, Batman Year One and what they did with Batman Begins in the Nolan trilogy to show those early years of Bruce kind of honing his craft. It didn't go so much into his detective skills, but, you know, how he got his ninja fighting skills honed. But now it's got me questioning, well, actually, in this kind of universe, is it really Alfred taking him under his wing? Because Bruce was still very young. And actually, how much of an influence did Alfred have over where Bruce eventually went to?
Oh, yeah. You can completely see that all of the people that Alfred obviously knows, Bruce was never really in any danger while he's out in the world learning his skills. Alfred is 100% aware of where he is because he sent him there.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking the advice, you know, because he doesn't, well, later on in the series, he does use a gun to a fairly brutal effect, but, you know, he's pretty handy with his fists, isn't he? But I think it's the strategy, it's the intelligence of him as well, you know. So you mentioned about Ripper, when his son's hitting on the barmaid. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking that is a really, really tough situation, because if you go in all guns blazing, you know, you're just going to get taken out. And so I love that whole strategy of kind of how he went in there. He put the nephew in a really awkward position, and that's how he dealt with the situation. But I do love, he never really loses his cool. And even when Ripper's got him in that little trapdoor thing, he's going, well, you got to bat yourself, haven't you? He's just got an answer for everything. And, you know, you mentioned Michael Caine before. He's absolutely, you know, that Alfie Michael Caine, if you've ever seen that 60s movie. He's absolutely channeling him. And I don't hold anything against him at all. I think he absolutely nails it.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I don't know who the casting director was or what the process was. I didn't do any of that research, but it is a perfect fit. And I believe he's him. And like you said, Chris, there's a couple of times where Thomas has said, pay Alfred whatever he is, because he's worth it. We need him. And so there's already this understanding that he's the best guy. He's their guy. And he's amazing.
Well, obviously, yeah, exactly. You're right. And I think Ripper guy is brilliant, especially when, obviously, I've got a little theory, guys. Can we talk about Esme? Now, sure. Obviously, now she does get taken out, doesn't she, in the fourth episode. She gets killed. He's his love of his life, or partially love of his life. Well, at least for four episodes. And I want to know off you guys, in the fourth episode, and spoilers, guys, as we always say, because, you know, if you haven't watched it, please forgive us, but she does get killed. Now, who do you both think it is? What are your theories on it? Because I've got a theory, and I want to see if either of you are on the same wavelength as me. So, Tony, you first, please.
Oh, I think it's the Prime Minister and the Queen of England.
Okay. Dave?
Yeah, so I honestly, I haven't got a clue, Chris, but I'm going to go with Tony's answer there, because I think we've seen a lot of the Raven Society, you know, this more right-wing kind of elitist group, and then you've got the No Name Society, which is kind of this leftist, almost communist-type group. But, I mean, oh, what's his name? Lord Harwood? I mean, from the pilots, I thought he was going to be a prominent villain. And then they just absolutely brutalise him. And the Prime Minister is right there, front and centre, with the torture and everything, sending him off to the butcher. And so, yeah, I can absolutely believe that the government that's in power is doing a lot of dealing under the table.
Well, gentlemen, I'm glad neither of you have come up with my theory. So, as we say, there's a bit of a Sherlock Holmes theory to, or Sherlock Holmes similarity, shall we say, sorry. I think you're both wrong. You know who I think's killed her? His dad.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I'm telling you, I think his dad's got, because when they came in and captured his mum and dad could go a bit. His mum chinned one of the women and his dad went a bit, and he's a bit of fear there of Alfred, mainly because of his mum, because obviously his dad's obviously give his mum a bit of a beating over the years. But he does get told that it's usually the one closest to you that would make you want, you know, wants to say. And I think, because he gets told that, doesn't he, by Ripper, I think it's his dad. I think his dad's involved somewhere along the lines, because the boots and everything, I'm sure we saw him in them shoes. Sorry, not the boots, because you see him creaking. And I could be wrong, but I've got a feeling it could be him.
I think a major thing. I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think you're wrong, because at the end of the day, at the moment, Alfred is not a butler. His dad has got to do something to kind of convince Alfred to become a butler. And I think if he ever found out that his dad did that, then I don't think he'd be able to get over that, to be honest. And so that's the only reason. I think it's a good theory. I think, if anything, I don't like the vicar. I don't like her own dad. You know, had said basically he was going to disown her. And so she wasn't really bothered by that. And so I just think, you know, the vicar is, you know, he's not a high-powered businessman or anything, but he's still, you know, that pompous prick, basically. So I think, if anything, it could be her own dad.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, too. Yeah, the only reason I think it's the queen is, you see two people, and in the very first episode or second episode when Alfred meets the queen, so that's, I mean, that looked like a teenage Elizabeth, too. Again, I have no idea when this is supposed to be. But there's a line in there where somebody says, the queen was quite taken with you, Alfred. And so, is she's a bit of a sociopath, this version of her that we see. So could that be, I mean, is it just a straight up that, get rid of Esme so she can have Alfred? I mean, I have no idea. That's the closest thing I can think of right now.
That would be taking a chance, wouldn't it? Basically making the queen a sociopath.
They have her, but she's sitting there next to the prime minister as he's talking about. I mean, she's in on it. Well, so,
and I think if you go to real life, guys, and I'm now obviously I love a speculation and I love a, you know, bit of conspiracy, but I'll just say two words to you. You're calling the queen a sociopath, Princess Diana.
No. Come on now. Wow. I don't know if that's going to make the final cut.
Who's listening, Chris?
you know what's bizarre, though? If you want to take
your last episode.
No, if you want to take the conspiracy theory to the next level, the woman what's her name? Emma Corrin, who's playing Esme, is playing Diana in the new season of The Queen on Netflix.
Yeah.
The Crown. So see, you've connected it all.
I'm going to set these a corgi running across my front garden as we speak. It better be great.
Probably edit all that
in
out.
Black suits.
I don't think that makes the final show.
No, I don't either.
But I mean, I touched on it there. But like I say, you've got this Raven Society and the no names. And again, I think it was in the kind of 20s. And the only reason I really know this is because of Peaky Blinders, that you kind of did have this communist movement. You know, when was it? It was during the First World War, wasn't it? That the Russian Revolution happened. And that right. kind of idea of communism, you know, it was sweeping the UK as well. So I think they've kind of brought that from the 20s. And then you had, when you had that battle in the streets, you kind of had the skinheads and everything. And that was something you saw more in the 70s. So again, I think they're just drawing from a very wide pool of British history and then just throwing it all in there in this massive melting pot.
Yeah, no, that's, and I think that's, you know, it's an interesting, you know, there's the backstory. And I think, you know, episode 5, the end of what we're talking about today, took a bit of a step back in that Alfred wasn't in it enough. That was a problem. You really realize that the whole show is really hinging on one actor, and that showed a little bit of maybe its weakness. But it was a plot, you know, episode 5 definitely moved the plot forward, and all of that conversation about the No Name League and the Raven Society and who's, you know, who's on whose side. And so, you know, that's fine. You can't just have it be, this isn't a comic book. So it's like, there's just one issue and this is what happens now in episode 2. It's a totally different story. You know, they want to have a story arc. So I understand you need to have a plot there, and there's nothing like a government overthrow to be an interesting plot. So I like where they're going. I just thought focusing so much on that in episode 5 and not focusing on Alfred was a bit of a problem. I don't know what you guys thought.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Davy gets a bit of more airtime, obviously the psychopath Scottish friend, but it's a bit too convenient. He has revealed his hands are loose cannon anyway. Obviously, Alfie obviously keeps him under control, and when he's not with him, he's just gone and he's taken the money off Thomas Wayne to go and kill, you know, it's the, when the Raven Society and the No Name meet up, he's there. I mean, it's a bit thingy. He's dressed as a waiter, and straight away some of the guys there like, who are you? Who are you? And he's like, well, why would you say you're under arrest? Because he's just got a waiter's outfit on. I was a bit bemused by that. As much as I've loved the show, I was thinking, that makes no sense. Some guy, he's off sick. Well, why straight away is he on the defensive? That this guy is a lunatic. And then obviously he pulls a gun on him as having a meeting. But I don't know about you, Tony, but this bit, where he ends up finally coming in and Alfie comes in and blows that guy's head off. Oh my word. That was, I mean, it is gruesome anyway. I should say that to everyone listening. It's probably one of the most violent things I've seen in a long time. And that's including The Boys as well, which is a pretty violent show. But this is up there because that bit with this shotgun, oh my word.
Yeah, that was shocking. I mean, earlier, the episode before, that Alfred accidentally shoots an old lady in the face, too, with the shotgun. So there's a lot of faces getting blown off by shotguns. But, this is definitely a TVMA over what we call it here. I think you guys 18, right? It is it is for adults, for sure. I was shocked. I know that actually showed, you know, how far down Alfred had gone. Because I always felt like he, you know, he had his own kind of code. But obviously he's so mad about Esme and he wants to find out who killed her that he's willing to do anything, including shoot this guy in the face he doesn't know him. He has got no skin in that game at all. So I found that like I was definitely shocked by that scene for sure.
I was not expecting Alfred to do it, but I wasn't expecting, you know, the shot was brutally fantastic though, to be honest. I mean, you can see, basically, that probably is what a shotgun would really do, isn't it? You know, it blew the top of his head off. And you can see, you know, he's still got his bottom set of teeth there. And it's like, wow, I didn't expect to see that. And again, you know, you're taking this, you know, father figure for Bruce Wayne, you know, this cuddly bloke who does the dusting around the house, you know, and just absolutely brutal. And I think you see right at the end there, that, though, don't you, that, you know, it was a ruse by the wife, you know, to get Ripper and just point him in the right direction. And Alfie did exactly what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
No, go, Tony. You're all right.
No, I agree. Yeah, I think it was that this is the episode two where you see Alfred isn't as, you know, that as put together as we think. I mean, we know, as you mentioned, Dave, he's got PTSD and he and Martha had that conversation about, you know, if people coming back from war don't tell you they have dreams and nightmares and then they're lying. So, yeah. You know, we're setting this up that he's not totally in control, but his day-to-day life is in control all the time. And, except now he's completely thrown apart. So I think this show is about that too. Like you said, Dave Boy's totally lost his mind. Baz is doing coke with the go-go girls in the background. Everybody's a mess without Alfred. The show itself was a mess without Alfred. So maybe that was on purpose. But yeah, it was brutal. And for him to do that definitely showed a different side of him that I didn't see coming.
No, I agree. And I think as well, he's while running in this from about episode three, he's actually his friend's Spanish who dies. I mean, he getting these flashbacks to this jungle scene, which I did say today, if I could be wrong, is this not a reference to what Michael Caine says in The Dark Knight about going on an SAS mission in the jungle? I'm sure he mentions it either in The Dark Knight or The Dark Knight Rises. He might be in Dark Knight Rises with Bane and stuff.
Wasn't it The Dark Knight when he's talking about, you know, the Joker and sometimes some people just want to see the world burn?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. I just kept thinking, is that what this was in reference to? And obviously, Spanish is there covered in blood and he's having loads of conversations with him. And then there's the woman he blew up as well. So, yeah, so he isn't. He's completely unstable, whereas on the outside, he just looks cool, doesn't he, in this suave sort of dormant gangster, to be honest. But again, I mean, he's five episodes and it's almost like you're watching five films for me. I think the whole thing put together is fantastic.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's well said. This is it's set up to be a film. There's nothing about this. If they had put out a Pennyworth series of movies and it's this, you'd say, oh, that's an excellent trilogy. Mm-hmm. Everything about it is that high quality.
Yeah. So should we go into our review, guys?
Yeah, sure. Let's go.
So, Tony, would you like to go first today as our guest?
Sure. Yeah, I would love to. I've been thinking about this a lot since we talked about me coming on. And I want to say that it's if it was just, we just did episode one, it's an Asgard. It is. There's nothing else like it. I think because episode five took a step back and we saw the show has a weakness without Jack Bannon or Paloma Faith on screen, because there's a lot of scenes without the two of them. So that's the only thing that's keeping it for me. It's in Atlantis. It has the chance to redeem itself and be a full Asgard. It's high, sitting up on the throne next to Mira there. But that's where I'm going to go ahead and put it, just because episode five took a step back and it made me nervous.
That's good stuff. What about yourself, Dave?
Well, I kind of agree. I can't let go of the baggage that I just wonder how much of this, how many series are we actually going to get? But I think I'm in this for the long game. I'm in for like 3 to 5 seasons. And if I'm thinking in that context, then sometimes you do have to have these quieter episodes where you're doing a bit of table setting. I actually quite liked the time that they gave to Bazza and Davy Boy, because, you know, initially I was thinking, oh, well, these are just fodder. They're not going to last at all. And, you know, Davy Boy in particular, you can see he's right on the edge. And he had a great line about kind of, I don't want to die. I'm just passing the time, you know. So he's constantly putting himself in these dangerous situations and really needs help at a time when, you know, no one's there to give him help. Now, I think I've probably got a bit of baggage from loving and watching Peaky Blinders for 4, and we're into the 5th season now, so I'm kind of bringing a little bit of that with me as well, and I am just absolutely loving this series. I think there's been a few things now that Warner Brothers DC have just knocked out the park, and this one to me is a massive surprise, but this is knocked out the park for me as well. So Asgard it is for me.
Good stuff. Now, for me, I am slightly with Tony on this. I think it's fantastic. I'm really impressed with everything about it, the photography, the way it's been filmed, the acting. Jack Bannon steals everything with some great supporting actors and actresses. Paloma Faith, again, as I mentioned earlier. I'm not going to give it an Asgard for the simple reason is I want to see how it plays out. I think it's a very good point, Tony, because for me, Daredevil and The Boys have been the two best things that I have personally reviewed in the 88 episodes of Comics in Motion. As a series, they stand out head and shoulders above everything. The Boys especially, that didn't have a bad episode at all. It was the same quality all the way through. There's nothing wrong with this. It's a fantastic show. Something's niggling me that it's going to get cancelled and I'm going to get completely invested in this and it's just going to get thrown on the scrap heap. But again, watching the five episodes, it is really, really good. It's fantastic. But I'm not going Asgard, so I'm going Atlantis as well, because I think it'd be nice if we could come back at the end of the 10th episode, which is the end of the series, and re-review it and then give an overall score, which is something myself and you have done, Dave, haven't we? Because I think it deserves it. If it's the same quality all the way through, I think it's going to be something special.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that if you guys want to, you know, do the second or even just a quick bit like, hey, the end of Pennyworth, here's the upgraded scores. I'd be all in on that.
Definitely. Definitely will do that. Definitely. We've done it before. I think it deserves it as far as I can, unless it falls off a cliff for the next five episodes. But I think if it carries on, it's going to be something really good. So
the only thing that's holding me back slightly is just that fear of cancellation. That's the only thing for me. And like I say, I think Warner Brothers DC have hit it out the park, and then things like Doom Patrol. And then, you know, I'm waiting, chomping at the bit to watch Swamp Thing, and then it gets cancelled before I've even watched the first show. So that's the only negative for me. But hopefully, you know, because it's on this slightly different platform with lower expectations, I'm hoping it's in for the long haul.
Yeah, I think what could happen is, depending on how it streams in the rest of the world, and there's, you know, sometimes that matters, the show. It can do fair in its home country, but then it catches fire elsewhere. So that's the hope. I think it's amazing. And yeah, I mean, honestly, after the first episode, I was like, well, this is an Asgard without a doubt, but it's just, I'm a little nervous. I think if it gets canceled, I'll be so mad. Fingers crossed all the way. Well, we can start a feverish letter writing. We'll all tweet at Epics,
online,
you know, renew Pennyworth.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Tony, where can everybody get you?
Sure. I review this show, Pennyworth, and other comic books at DC Comics News. And you can find me on Twitter at Tricycle Boombox. And if I usually comment on all of your shows. So if people want to find me there, they can find me probably commenting. I will be commenting on your other show probably in the next day or two.
Excellent. Now, Dave, where can everyone find us for this show?
Now, you can email us at comicsinmotionpodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach us on Twitter at comicsinmotionp. You can also get our other podcast, which we alluded to there, which is the VHS Strikes Back. And there we look at all old movies from that VHS era, so kind of 70s through to the mid-noughties, and just have a look at those, indulge them, and really ask, do they really stand up to what our nostalgic lenses, our nostalgic memories actually think of them? Now, Chris, how would you like to finish us off today?
Well, Dave, you've stitched me up this week, and it makes a goddamn change, but I've got absolutely nothing. So have you got anything to take the show out today?
Well, as we've indulged in, you know, we've all called out the fact that, you know, this Alfred is definitely the Michael Caine Alfred. And I just think one of my favourite lines, and I don't even know why it's a favourite line of mine, I think I could just close my eyes and imagine Michael Caine delivering it. And it's when Alfred says, I don't do violence anymore. Speak to you next week.
Joke.
This is Acast Recommends. Every week we pick one of our favorite shows, and this is one we think you're gonna love.
Why did Sacha Baron Cohen get chased by the Secret Service? What made Sarah Silverman stand by her friend Louis C.K.? How did Mindy Kaling miss out on SNL? I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast, and on The Last Laugh, comedians reveal how they're staying funny in a world that's falling apart.
As long as I'm laughing,
yeah.
I laugh at the things I say or anyone else. I just like laughing.
Next up, how everything changed for Nick Offerman when he became Ron Swanson on Parks and Rec.
Life was like, oh, by the way, things are going to get way more super crazy.
Acast is home to the biggest podcasts from the U.S. and around the world. Subscribe to this show and hundreds more now via Acast or wherever you get your podcasts.